Hey there, this is the Wine Sleuth, and on this edition of my podcast, I had the pleasure of speaking with the legendary Australian winemaker Brian Crozer. Brian, as most of you probably know, started Petaluma Winery in the Adelaide Hills of South Australia in 1976 and sold it in 2001. However, selling Petaluma was a new start for Brian and his wife, Anne, and after the sale, they started a new label and called it Tapanapa. I had dinner with Brian and Anne at the Savoy Grill recently here in London, where I asked Brian to explain Tapanapa and its wines and philosophy in a bit more detail. All right, so Brian, so now you're doing, you have this new, well, relatively new vineyard called, or winery called Tapanapa. Can you tell me a little bit about how that came about and what, again, is the philosophy and what are you growing, etc.?
After Petaluma was taken over in 2001, we started again. Anne and I started again. And we started with our partners, Bollinger of Champagne, invited new partners in, Kaz of Lynchbarge and Pauillac in Bordeaux. But with essentially the same mission as Petaluma started in 1976, which is to find the best location to grow a specific variety, grow it in the best possible way, and make the best and truest wine to the terroir of that location. We also decided at that time in 2001, after the takeover, that we would try not to trip over Petaluma. And Petaluma has Riesling and Clare. So we didn't go to Clare. We went to Oregon to make Riesling, a good place to make Riesling. We decided that we would make Pinot Noir, but not from the Piccadilly Valley, where Petaluma is, from the Fleuriot Peninsula. We decided that we would make Cabernet and Merlot and Cabernet Franc and Shiraz from a new area, Rattambulli, not Coonawarra. The one area where we couldn't avoid the conflict is the area where Petaluma Winery, our family home, our Tears Vineyard, all the vineyards we've established in the Piccadilly Valley are, and we share those vineyards with willingly, gleefully, in an ongoing, happily in an ongoing fashion with Petaluma, and always do that and be happy to do that. So, in a way, Tapanapa is a new wine business like Petaluma was a new wine business in 1976 with much the same objectives, but with much older people, more experienced people, wiser people.
Older and wiser.
And different regions.
And so what is the style that, because you said, you know, you had your Riesling with Petaluma, and so what is the style of wine that you are going for example, with your Chardonnays?
Well, style of wine is really decided by where you grow the grapes. It's not the winemaker's choice. I know that winemakers love and the wine media love to have the human hand as the vital influence in wine style and wine quality. But in fact, it's the terroir, the environment, the climate, the soil, the geology, all of the factors, the geographical factors that feed into the vine, which translates that into grape composition, and then the winemaking process in a much more robotic fashion transforms that into wine quality and style. So our styles are really decided by our choice of vineyard site. And in Oregon, for Riesling, that's a challenge. We've had the three coolest seasons in Oregon ever in the wine grape growing
era. And what years were those?
They were, our first vintage was 2008. Then we had a warm vintage in 2009. Then we had an even cooler vintage in 2010. And then an even cooler vintage in 2011. So we've been through a succession of really, really cool vintages. And we've had to work out how to balance the sugar and the acid in those extremely cool grown Riesling grapes to make something that's palatable, which is quite different to growing Riesling grapes in Clare, which is almost twice the amount of heat in the growing season, where you can make every year a dry wine because there's enough sugar and flavor.
It's not going to be a problem to make a dry Riesling.
But in Oregon it is, But in Oregon, you produce something that's entirely different. It's delightful. It's got florals that are reminiscent of Germany and Alsace and roses and all sorts of exotic fruits that you don't get out of the lime and honey characters out of the Clear Valley. So we love that.
So completely different wine.
And utterly different, yeah.
So in Tampa, we had your Pinot Noir tonight, which was lovely. And I know it's a vineyard, or I suppose a grape, maybe dear to your heart in Australia. Can you tell me a little bit about how that came about?
Well, the Pinot Noir is an entirely new venture. We're in a new area where nobody else is. We're almost 20 kilometers from the nearest other vineyard. And we're on the edge of the Great Southern Ocean, next stop Antarctic. And it's very cool. It's quite high. And protected from the southern winds because it faces north on a very steep slope. Pinot Noir on close spacing with French clones on rootstocks, grown almost as in Burgundy. And it's a completely different environment. The day-night differential over the growing season is very low, so we have very cool days and quite warm nights, which means the plant works for 24 hours a day.
I mean, that's usually, you know, when you talk to winemakers, they say, oh, you know, we want, you know, a big diurnal difference, you know, hot days, cool nights.
Well, that's the greatest lie in viticulture. And I don't want to be the Julian Assange of Australian winemaking, but that is the greatest myth of all time. And the architect of knowledge in all of this is an old guy. 85 years old, lives in Margaret River, called John Gladstones, who discovered Margaret River. He's one of the great Australian biological agricultural scientists. He's written a book on vines, viticulture, climate change, and terroir, which is one of the best books written on wine viticultural science.
I'm sorry, what was the name of the book?
Well, the book is called, I've got to get this right, it's called Wine, Terroir, and Climate Change.
And the fellow's name
is? John Gladstones, Professor John Gladstones. And he points out that the places in the world where the diurnal range, the difference between day and night temperature, are the lowest are where the best grapes are grown and the best wines are made. The cold night, hot day, high diurnal variation theorem is flawed. It's wrong. It's constructed by people who have to live with that sort of environment. Anyway, it's a story that's worth telling.
Interesting. Well, definitely have to look into that for sure. But in the meantime, your Pinot Noirs, though, how are they coming along? How are you feeling?
Well, the Pinot Noir has grown in a place where there's only 8.5 degrees between day and night temperature across the whole growing period, whereas, say, in Coonawarra, it's 14, and in some places I work with in Chile, it's 20. So 8.5 is way down there. Bordeaux's only 10. And in that area, in the Foggy Hill, Fleurieu Peninsula vineyard, Pinot Noir works all day to produce sugar. At night it produces color and flavor. The sugar goes down. The next day it produces more sugar. The next night color and flavor are produced, and so on. So at the end you end up with a wine that is got lots of color, lots of flavor, lots of tannin, at low sugar and therefore low alcohol or moderate alcohol, with the right sort of characteristics that haven't been burned out by hot days. It's had cool day environment.
And do you think that has anything to do with the fact, for example, I was talking about earlier how I've had Australian Pinot Noirs, and they always tend to have this kind of smoky, slightly burnt note to it, and yours don't. I mean, what do you think?
Well, some of that could be that the Pinot Noirs you've tasted from Mornington and Yarra over the last few years, they've had some pretty severe bushfires, and there's been some pretty severe smoke contamination of wines, which is widely recognized and understood as a problem. So that's one reason that they may have it. They've actually had exposure to smoke. The other reason might be that they've used more toasty oak, more oak influence in the wines than we need with the sort of fruit that we're getting out of the Fleurieu Peninsula, which is inherently floral, inherently spicy, exotic spice, peacock's tail, but still has the very good silky middle palate and strong fine tannins at the end. So yeah, that's what I think of my Pinot. I think it's pretty good.
Well, I have to say, I think it's pretty good too. All right, well, Brian, thank you very much. I think we should get back to drinking the Pinot.
Okay, I agree with that. But it's been a very, very fine night.
Yes, it has been. Thank you very much.
And that was the delightful Australian winemaker, Brian Crozer, talking about his wine label, Tapanapa. Well, that will do me for this time around. Thanks for listening. And if you have any questions or comments, you can find me at thewinesleuth.co.uk.